Calling back folks of America and live from the G&D show studio. This is your Ghost Benedict Hunter show.
Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Welcome back, listeners around the world, to the one, the only Mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show. Hello, hello, world.
Why, hello, Sean. What? This is the world.
Hello, world. I've got a few questions for you.
The answers are all no.
That's it, man. That is it. But welcome back, guys. It's a beautiful early October Sunday's Eve.
It's not quite October's.
Autumn's Eve.
I'll give you Autumn's.
It's something autumn. But I'm excited, man. Halloween's in the air. And this is the Mystifying Oracle Radio.
It is in the air. It's like a cool breeze rushing in after a long, hot summer.
Long, hot summer. Sounds like a porno. Long, hot summer. Wasn't there a porn named after
No, I think that was
summer,
the name you used for your coin.
The long, hot summer. Hey guys, apologies for last week. We experienced
technical difficulties.
Yeah, we were had a lot of stuff going on. We did. We had stuff happen. We had a couple guests lined up. So tonight we have your double header for you. We haven't done one of these in a long time, brother.
It's been years, Sean.
Years.
Remember, it got to the point we used to have the double headers on all the time, and we said, you know what? With all these guests on, we don't get to talk.
Yeah, you don't. It got real confusing. You know?
It did.
You had everybody on there, and they would all talk at once, and you couldn't do it. But tonight's not going to be like that.
Hey, we are under control now.
That's it, guys. Hey, world. Tonight's band, Demon Hunter, Redzilla. Redzilla, guys. Those guys are amazing. I love their stuff. Redzilla. Find out more about them, guys, at ReverbNation.com. Once again, the band's name, Redzilla. Where to look for them, ReverbNation.com. You can also check them out on Facebook, guys. You can check out our Ghostman and Demon Hunter show page. You'll see in our likes that they're on there. And also mine, Demon Hunter. But Redzilla, what a rocking band. Thanks, guys, for the tunes. We appreciate it.
You know, I hope they'll take this as a compliment because it's the way it's meant. But it was quite a flashback for me there. It kind of gave me that 1980s Pat Benatar kind of feeling.
Yeah, well, I think so. I think, how could that ever be taken as...
I don't know their musical likes and dislikes, but how could you sound that cool and not be a Pat Benatar? Because, I mean, let's face it, Pat Benatar, hot. She was hot.
Pat Benatar, she was hot. Well, she's still kind of hot, ain't she?
I haven't seen her around in a long time. She doesn't stop by the house anymore,
really?
So I don't know.
Well, she stopped by mine.
Biggie Fries?
Yes. Anyway, Pat Benatar.
She stopped by yours with the summons saying, "Stop calling my house!"
Yeah, absolutely. Redzilla, they did a big show, Nathan, for... they did like Cemetery's Rocket Nightmares or something last night in Greencastle, Indiana. So I hope you guys
that
had a great
time. Like it was the place to be.
Yeah, we helped old Sammy out a couple years back. We did the signed autographs and stuff for him. Yeah.
Everybody bow your heads for 2 seconds of silence for Sammy Terry.
Absolutely. American legend. Indiana legend, man. Indiana.
Well, I only say 2 seconds. He deserves more than that, Sean, but you know what? In radio, you can't have more than 2 seconds of silence.
Right. He was amazing. We had him on a couple times. And, we played that. We had a whole tribute show to him. What a great... Passing of a legend, guys. Passing of a legend. But what's going on, Demon Hunter? Like I was saying, Halloween, guys. Huh? Our favorite time of the year. All you freaks out there, especially for this dark show that we put on here. It's in the air, man. I could smell it today. The leaves.
I couldn't help myself this week, Sean. I was out pulling out the cemetery, putting it out on the front yard. So there's a graveyard in my front yard now.
You pulled out a cemetery? Isn't that
Yeah. I keep a whole cemetery in stock just for the front yard. the tough part is finding the bodies to fill it.
That's what I was going
to
say.
But, decorated the whole house, got the mantle going with the busts of the Dracula and the Wolfman and Frankenstein up there.
Oh yeah, you got you have the Wolfman bust too.
For the gangbang.
Oh yeah, Wolfman, Frankenstein, yeah. Dracula got a cool mask of the Red Death up there. A couple cool. others, the Invisible Man, all that fun stuff.
Who's the Red Death?
The Red Death from Edgar Allan Poe's Mask of the Red Death.
Oh yes, I forgot.
It's you know, for those of you not the huge Poe fans that Sean and I are, which.
Right.
Mask of the Red Death, but a noble prince wanted to throw a party during a time of plague,
yeah.
and his only rule was no one was allowed to wear red, and red someone death. Shows up in red and chases the prince through the castle, and it's a fun story. I'm not going to give it away. Read it, folks. Read it.
You sure they need to read it?
They need to read it. It's Edgar Allan Poe, Sean. They need to read it.
I'm here for the gangbang.
Anyway, man, like you said, October's in there. You got a cool front yard. And we started putting out the, you inspired me because we did the G&D Show Manhattan Tour 3 or 4 weeks ago. I forgot which. And we got to go to Sleepy Hollow, man. I still got that feeling in me bones from walking around the old Dutch church burial ground in the old Dutch burial ground and where the headless Hessian soldier was
That's
said,
right.
of course, the headless horseman was said to rise nightly and chase old poor Ichabod Crane around town and whatnot.
So tell me, Mr. Yeah. Burris, who's now a year older as of yesterday.
Yes.
Did you get any headless gifts for your birthday?
I thought you were going to say, did I get any?
hey, I wasn't thinking that at all. Where Thank were you, you going with that, man?
I know.
Come on, this is a family show.
I am. Year old. 38 years old. Thank you. September 28th, 1975. The Ghost Man.
Listen to that. The people love you.
See? Celebrating a legend, Demon Hunter. No, but thanks for all the special happy birthdays, guys, and everything yesterday. It means a lot to the Ghost Man. And I know me and Nathan, we've been doing this for a long time and been through, seven birthdays here on the air doing it.
So, seven birthdays.
Seven.
And, hard to believe. You got older and I stayed just as young and handsome as I always was.
I know, but I'm aging better than you, I think.
I know. I'm just not aging.
I know. See?
I refuse.
See? You are.
Gangbang?
Yes.
Everybody at work is pretty sure that I'm a clone.
Yeah.
Because I've done so many stupid things over the years that should have gotten me killed. They're pretty sure I've actually died several times over the years and they just keep replacing me.
Oh, shoot. Yeah. Yeah, but it was a good birthday, Demon Hunter. We had the, I got some firewood. We had the fire pit out back and had a nice little fire outside. The leaves aren't quite falling, some of them are. And we sat out there. It was a full moon last night. Rained all day today here in beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana. But yesterday, the rain held off, and I had a great birthday, man. I wish you could have been here. Wish a lot of our friends around the world could have joined us for the Ghost Man Jubilee as I brought in 38, the big 38, man. 2 years from 40.
2 years from 40. Man, 40 seems like so far away. We just, I hope we never hit it.
I know. Yeah. I don't know what I'll do.
Yep, that's I guess that's a wrong wish to make.
We should go out for a yeah. You hope I never make it. That's what. Hoo-ah! Yes, thank you.
Yes, then I'll just sit back and collect on all the dividends from you know the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show.
Hoo-ah! I am noticing though that I'm getting hair in places that I never had it before.
Well, that's called puberty, Sean.
Well,
it happens
yeah.
to every young man.
But I got that. But what I was talking about is the today I was noticed. I was in the stand in the bathroom mirror and I was doing my hair. You know, I was making sure that it's perfect as usual. And I noticed there was something sticking out of my ear. I was like, "Holy cow, man! It must have been 3 foot long." I mean, it was sickening, and it was real fine, and I couldn't. I just couldn't. I couldn't comprehend.
You sex demon!
I had this long hair coming out of my ear, so I had to get ear trimmers now. So I got a beard.
That was your birthday gift, ear trimmer.
Oh my god! I guess Stacy was trying to tell me something. I was like, oh no way, man! I got ear hair.
No.
Thank you, Jed. Just like my dad, you know. So I'm up there now, Demon Hunter. I'm up there, but you know, birthdays. Every year when I have a birthday, I go into like this deep reflection mode. And I don't really reflect on anything. It's just like everything slows down, especially around this time of year.
A deep reflection mode without reflection, a book by Sean Burris.
All reflection, but no reflection mode.
A vampire reflection mode.
Yeah.
Scotty, beat me up.
All right. So I did. I started reflecting on the Big 3-8 and where we are in this life's path. And I dedicated myself to another 7 years on the air, Demon Hunter.
Another seven.
I think I can make it. I'm going to try.
You think I can make it?
I don't think you will. It'll be the ghost man and the ghost of Demon Hunter show.
That's right. The ghost. It'll just be the ghost of Demon Hunter show.
Ghost of Demon Hunter.
The ghost man, Sean B.
Yeah, anyway. Hey, we got to move right along. We're at 7:13, guys.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, we got a doubleheader. Demon Hunter?
Yes, Mr. Burris?
Listeners around the world, tonight's guest.
Dun-dun-dun.
You ready?
I'm always ready.
First up, guys, we got author, lecturer, Corker Johnston. Author of A Cherry Demon Haunting. It's the true story of Paranormal Case 263. Not 264 or 265, but the true story of...
262 is totally different.
Right, exactly. It's the true story of Paranormal Case 263. He's going to stop by and tell us about the real-life close encounter with the demonic force that he had on a case, man. I'm excited about that. And Corker's a great guy. Absolutely. A little bit later, guys, on our doubleheader, we got Amy Holloman. She's coming by, guys. She's from Terror Behind the Walls, director and character actor for Terror Behind the Walls at Eastern State Penitentiary. We're going to find out what it's like to work at one of America's largest haunted attractions and real-life haunted prisons. Huh? Tonight on your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show.
It's exciting, Sean. It's exciting.
We got a cherry demon haunting. There's only one way to say that. You know what? A cherry demon haunting. It's a great book, man. It's went up to number one bestseller on Amazon and stuff. I mean, it's really popping. I'm happy for Corker, man. He seems like a nice guy, and he's coming on the show tonight. So we're excited about it, guys. We got him up at 7:30. And then we have Amy Holloman coming on at 8 o'clock. So it's going to be a bam, 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 bam type show tonight.
It's one of those shows, Sean, where originally, folks, like Sean said, we had some difficulties last week, so we couldn't bring, you know, Corker on to the show.
Right.
So we said, you know, let's have you on next week. And then we'd realized, you know, oh, yeah, we also have Amy on that week. What do we do? Well, we do a double hitter.
We do a double shot.
Because there's no way.
Right.
That as we enter the Halloween season, Sean,
right,
I was going to pass on a chance to talk to someone from Eastern State Penitentiary in Terror Behind the Walls.
Well, you got to do it, yeah.
Take some beans!
I mean, come on. I mean, you and I love that old history of America.
Oh my God, yes.
It's the first prison ever built in America.
It is.
Well, the first penitentiary, the first long-term prison.
Wasn't that the place...
I'm here for the gangbang?
...that Al Capone was in?
Al Capone did spend, I think, 2 years in prison there, and he had his own special cell separated from the rest of the inmates.
He was a special guy.
Oh, good grief.
He was. Charlie Brown thinks so. Anyway, guys, that's tonight's guest, doubleheader. But Demon Hunter, since we're running a little bit short, do we want to do some news first, or you want to go into the special edition of G&D Legends?
You know, I would love to go into the special edition of G&D Legends if I can find it.
Well, I got it right here.
Oh, you have it right there.
Well, I have it queued up.
Well, then, by all means, sir.
Guys, tonight's episode of...
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Each week, Sean Burris and I come together and hunt down the greatest legends in America to bring them to you. Why? Because everybody loves a legend. Everybody wants to go out and hunt them down, find the truth behind them, and know the truth for themselves. But who can do it? Who can get out every week and find something new to talk about and tell a story around the campfire? Uh-huh. Not me, not you, but the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter put together can. And we bring it to you every week in a series that we call Legend X. Because these might not just be stories. These could be legends.
Tonight's legend, the Richmond Vampire.
Dun, dun, dun. I'm just loving saying that tonight.
You are. Man, you're getting really good at that. I'm proud of you. You're getting really good at bringing in the Legend X series. Huh? I'm going to turn up the music here for everybody. Adds the excitement. Huh?
I love it, Sean. I'm sitting here on pins and needles, waiting to hear you talk about this week's legend as I sip away at Sam Adams Harvest Pumpkin Ale.
Hey!
Year of the week.
Big shout out to Sam Adams. Hey, big shout out to Short Straw Farmhouse Red Ale. Huh? It's like autumn explodes in your mouth. Exploded in your mouth. Does that sound wrong?
It kind of does. It makes me wonder what autumn's doing in your studio, Sean.
In your mouth. That's terrible.
It's terrible. A family show. I'm sorry.
It is. Nutsack! Okay, ready for this?
I'm ready.
The Richmond Vampire, guys. Big nasty out there. We're talking about Richmond, Virginia, of course. The Richmond Vampire, you know, you could help me out with this one, Demon.
I'm looking.
He was said... Now, I seen the one guy that went out there. He was a paranormal investigator, and he decided to go out and research the Richmond Vampire. It's a legend from a long time ago out there in Richmond, Virginia, about the vampire that would roam the area. And I don't know, was he killing people? Did anybody come up? It says the Richmond Vampire is an urban legend that began soon after the collapse of the Chesapeake and Ohio Railroads. The Churchill Tunnel in Churchill, a district of Richmond, Virginia, which buried several workers alive on October 2nd, 1925. I guess it was a while ago. The story told of a blood-covered creature with jagged teeth and skin hanging from its muscular body that emerged from the cave raced towards the James River. Pursued by a group of men, the creature took refuge in the Hollywood Cemetery, where it disappeared in a mausoleum built into a hillside bearing the name W.W. Poole. Huh?
Oh.
Yeah. Gregory Maitland, founder of Night Shift, a Richmond-based group that researched urban legends and oral traditions, oral tradition, and the Virginia urban legend, and folklore experts at the Virginia Ghost and Haunting Research Society, VGHRS, who became interested in the Richmond vampire story. His study, Demon Hunter, of the disaster confirmed that after the tunnel collapsed, a living being escaped from the wreckage. It was, however, a big and strong 28-year-old railroad fireman. I've heard of railroad, man. Railroad fireman. Benjamin F. Mosby, 1896 to 1925, who had been shoveling coal into the firebox of a steam locomotive of a work train with no shirt on when the cave-in occurred and the boiler ruptured. Mosby's upper body was horribly scalded and several of his teeth were broken before he made his way through the opening of the tunnel. Witnesses reported he was in shock and layers of his skin were hanging from his body. He died later at the Grace Hospital. It was from there, Demon Hunter, that the story took on a life of its own through decades of retelling. Huh?
Yeah. And of course, folks, we get this information from local. What is it? Local My.
Yes.
My1000legends.com.
My1000. Yeah. I got this one actually. Yeah.
But
from their Wikipedia. You
know, this is a cool story, Sean. And oddly enough, I believe this one because it's not hard to believe that a blood-sucking creature lives within commuting distance of Washington D.C.
Right. A political joke.
Oh, I try.
Scotty, beat me up.
That's amazing. I dare you, sir. No, I liked it. That was good. That's it, though, the Richmond Vampire. How did you find that? Was amazing. That was a great legend.
You know, it's one of those things that, like I said, we go out every week and hunt down these legends, and the people who love them, just like we do, and, you know, you're looking for... The sad thing is, Sean, you try and look up stories about vampires here in America.
Candy bars.
That's right. And you get everything from...
Yeah.
Oh, geez. There's a new vampire TV show coming out every week. You know, everything from True Blood down in New Orleans down... and there's a new show called The Others coming out about vampires in New Orleans. And there's Vampire Diaries. And there's Vampire This and That. And... They all seem to, like, when you're Googling for vampire stories in America, you know, these pop up. So it's tough to sort out the true legends
All right.
from the fictional tales that are just straight fiction. Because let's face it, when we're dealing with legends, folks, there's only a few way these few ways. It's not drinking time yet, folks. Mm-hmm. That these legends get started. Either something really happened and no one knows how to explain it, or it's completely made up. And in our case, in this case, something happened.
It did
and
happen.
People are trying to explain what happened, yeah. And hence the legend is born.
See, how do we know that this couldn't have been
fascinating?
Yeah, another guy that came in and killed the guy that had the meat hanging off his bones, you know?
Well, it could have been, but like I said, again, they're trying to explain something that truly happened.
Yeah.
And hence, there's a legend.
I'm not buying
it. Take some beef!
Oh, well, you don't buy anything that's over $250.
I think there was a, that was terrible.
Oh, good grief.
I think that, thanks, Charlie Brad. I think that there possibly was someone, because how would they come up with the vampire? You know what I'm saying? How would they just say, oh, this was a vampire, he was, you know, somebody had to die, you know. They couldn't just seen a guy and, you know, said, oh, it's a vampire, and nothing ever happened. There had to be something. Huh?
I agree.
Yeah. Anyway.
Think of the time period. Think of the bodies that go missing. Think of, like, people who, you know, there was no insurance at the time. You wake up in the hospital and you're like, oh gosh, I'm going to have a big bill to pay. And you go to sneak out.
So we need to go down to Richmond, Virginia and check out the old Hollywood Cemetery. See what's out there. The mausoleum built into a hillside bearing the name W.W. Poole. Put that in our logbooks. Chesapeake and Ohio Railroad, Churchill Tunnel. That's where it happened at. Richmond, Virginia, Demon Hunter.
I'm all ready. You ready? Let's go.
I'm ready. We're going to have to get after that one next week. When you were Ghost Man.
Next week, you're going to have some stuff going on that's going to keep you busy.
No, the week after that.
Right, but trust me, I've been there. It's
Yeah, I know. Demon Hunter, hold on one second here.
You're going to be busy.
I got to fix this real quick. Bear with me. See? I got to fix it.
So fix it.
I fixed it.
Why are you wasting our time?
I know.
Just fix it.
I don't know why it did that. It's all fixed now. All better.
You know, Sean, we don't really have time to do a lot of news this week, but I wanted to throw just some interesting news stories out there. We like to do that.
Go ahead and do that.
Abandoned gold bars found in a train station in Germany.
Huh.
Makes you wonder about that Nazi gold that's gone missing, huh?
See?
Yeah, yeah. UFOs in Germany, videotaped with night vision.
Mm-hmm.
Stocktoberfest, naked haunted house, booed by Pennsylvania town.
Oh, the naked haunted house. I've been seeing that. I've been seeing that everywhere.
Yeah, it's apparently it's not going to happen, I don't think. It's no one is more disappointed than us, they said. Our attorneys realized that the legal right of ours to have this, that we had the legal right to have this, but okay, you can have a drink with that, folks. This is the news. But to prove in a court of law over months or years, it becomes a moot point.
A moot point. There you go.
So, that comes from the Huffington Post.
They were
for those of you who don't know, a small Pennsylvania town was organizing a haunted house. That I guess if you made it through naked,
yeah,
that was the goal. It was part of their Shocktoberfest.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Sean. I know you were planning to get out here for that one.
I was.
But what are you going to do?
Inconceivable.
I don't know. I was ready to come out there though. I seen the advertisements on my computer on the internet, and I was like, wow.
Let's face it, Sean, you were Googling the word naked, and it just came up.
But they can't do that, because you have nudist colonies out there, I bet.
Well, that's they're saying. They have the legal right, but they'd have to go to court to prove it, and by the time they got done, it'd be past time to be able to do it.
Yeah, well, so,
happy.
Yeah, mission accomplished, I guess.
I guess, that's the way it works. Hey, besides Squares. That in the news, baby born with an extra head.
Ooh.
Hornets attack and kill at least 18 in China.
Yeah.
Man shot in the head by girlfriend resist treatment because he didn't seem to mind. Makes you kind of wonder about those vampire stories we've been hearing.
It does. Might be another one.
Mysterious treasure found on Glacier.
Okay.
Superheroes battle it out over Vancouver. Huh? And where's the one that I was looking for earlier? There's now I've lost it. Oh, the crocodili flesh-eating drug.
I seen that.
In Arizona.
You see the cat that had the nose growing on his forehead? He had lost his nose.
I mean, this stuff is insane. It literally eats you up from inside and
yes.
redesigns your body.
Demon Hunter, the hour's upon us, sir.
Oh, well, that's the way it goes.
That's it. But these stories and more, guys, we'll get more in-depth into them next week. Like Demon Hunter said, this is our doubleheader, and this is your Mystifying Oracle Radio, Ghostman Demon Hunter Show. If you're just tuning in, guys, up next, Demon Hunter.
I'm waiting.
Up next, author of the book, Kacheri Demon Haunting. I changed it there. Real-life close encounter, guys, with the demonic. Corker Johnston stops by to tell us exactly what happened. The truth behind the true story of Paranormal Case 263, guys. That's our first guest up. And of course, a little bit later, Amy Holloman from Terror Behind the Walls, guys. One of America's leading haunted attractions this year. Huh?
Yes.
That's it, guys. We're going to take a break. You're going to hear our band, tonight's showcase band, Redzilla, guys. Of course, you can find out more about them on ReverbNation.com, also on Facebook. Tonight's band, Redzilla. Demon Hunter?
That's right. We'll be back right after this.
We'll be right back, guys.
Slow, but now I'm running fast. Mike Rooker, and you're listening to Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show. Enjoy yourselves. Oh my God. I am
That's right, guys. Welcome back, listeners around the world. This is your Mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show. Thank you, Mikey Rooker.
Huh? It's funny, too, Sean, because I just had Corker on the line, and he did a recording for me, and I said, oh, you should have heard when we had Mike Rooker on this phone. But by the time he finally got the name right, he was laughing hysterically while he did the recording.
Yeah, and Michael Rooker, of course, guys, from The Walking Dead. That's coming back, man. I'm excited.
It is, and we'll have to, you know, that was actually part of the news I was going to read tonight was about that drug, Sean, because, you know, that kind of sounds a lot like zombieism there. It's need is a few transmitted cases due to bites, and we'd be in a heap of trouble.
That's it, Demon Hunter. But let's get right into our doubleheader, guys, because we got a hot show tonight. First up, author Corker Johnston from the Acherry Demon Haunting, guys. The True Story of Paranormal Case 263. And Corker, what's going on, brother?
Hey, man. Not much. I'm doing really good and excited for the show.
Thanks, brother. Hey, did I pronounce that right? We've been arguing about it all night. Acherry.
Yeah, Acherry. Yeah, it's Acherry, yeah. I always get that, too. Some people are like, is the H silent? Is it T sound? But yeah, it's Acherry, just like the fruit.
They're good. I didn't miss
it. Acherry. There we go.
Acherry. Yep. I just got to say, Corker, I tell you what, Corker is a genuinely good guy, Demon Hunter. He took time to speak to us. He's been telling me how to do certain things on Facebook with writing and all this stuff. Just a great guy. Sent us some great pictures tonight that we're going to show up while he's talking about his new book. It's very good. It looks like a great book. It's number one on Amazon right now, right? Or the...
Yeah, it stays pretty much at number one. Like, once in a while, it'll drop to two because they update it every day, you know? But it's right. It's usually one, you know? And the second one is usually Annabelle from Ed and Lorraine Warren or book. But yeah, typically it's number one. It's been for the last 8 of 9 weeks, so.
Oh,
that must be the top, and it keeps selling, yeah.
That must be exciting when you like click onto Amazon and see that you're ranking that high.
Yeah, it's. I never thought when I wrote it. I wrote it for mainly one purpose, and it wasn't for financial. It wasn't for, fame and what have you. It was just to get the word out of this phenomenon of this, you know, of what not to do, of what I did wrong, you know, and. Just try to get the word out so people can learn from my mishaps and what, you know.
Well, see, Sean, there's our mistake right along. We should have been telling people all the things we do wrong. Oh, wait, we tell them that every week.
Yeah. They hear us do them wrong. That's, yeah. So, hey, Corker, let's jump right into it, brother, because you got a lot of stuff to tell here. Paranormal Case File 263. Tell us a little bit about your group, man, and how you started with it.
Well, I started with, my group is basically my immediate family, me and now my ex-wife. I was with her 24 years, we had just gotten divorced. So it was me, her, my daughter, my son, I have a local Native American man, I got a medicine man that works with us, and I got a clergy that does work with us. And that's about the extent. We keep it real small. Because my ex and my daughter are mediums, they have to concentrate during investigation.
Okay.
Things going on, you know, I can't have beeps, I can't have light flashing. It's got to be pretty silent, and therefore, smaller, condensed group is how we have to keep it.
Yeah. So
it's us, and we started out, I met my ex now, but my wife back when I was 16, so that was back 25 years. And ever since, she always had this gift of dreaming future things that would come true. And it was just crazy. It was actually kind of morbid because she would mostly dream death of loved ones. And that kind of got difficult to understand. She also, you know, did some communication with spirits. But what really kicked it into full drive is when my now 15-year-old daughter was born. As soon as she could talk and communicate, you know, effectively with, you know, adults and stuff, I noticed right away her ability. She's phenomenal.
Runs in the family.
Or anything, but she can speak, see spirits. We go to places, and it's crazy the conversations we record that she draws in.
And how old is your daughter now?
She's 15 now. She's just about 16.
And has the gift grown over time, or has it weakened? Or
sure.
Well, what happened is we started noticing that probably around four to five, and she was starting to say things to us or bring these things up, and she was seeing like black dogs. You know, she was seeing some dark things, and we thought, okay, could be something, could be imagination. All of a sudden, she was describing things. One time, I remember specifically, she was describing this funeral and this wedding she was at. And this one lady was reaching out to her in this vision, and she was wide awake during it. And she was calling her name, you know. And over the years, this woman kept showing up for her. I think, you know, as people, for people that believe in spirit guides, maybe it's that, you know, I don't know. But she was with her for years.
Mm.
But what had happened is, I took this information from this one time, and she said, yeah, there's these old cards, and I'm like, really? And she's a little artist, so I gave her a pencil and said, draw what you saw. You know, draw what you saw. All of a sudden, she was drawing Model T pickups, Model T cars. She's never seen one. You know, there's no, there's none around, but she, I mean, the girl was 6 years old. You know, she never was exposed to these details.
Right.
She could draw these cars with the lanterns and with the spoke wheels, and then I started thinking, you know, this isn't just imagination. You know, where did she come up with this thought? And we had brought her in. I knew of a psychologist. He was a psychologist for the Army. He was retired, but he's also a minister. So I figured, well, I don't want to be a parent that's in denial, you know, and thinking, it's nothing, and then end up having a daughter with some mental problem.
Right.
And I wanted to make sure it wasn't that, but I also want to make sure a scope from a minister and see what they thought. So I took him, this gentleman worked with her for a week, and he came back to me, and he's like, this is real. You know, this is not her imagination. This stuff's happening. And it went on for, you know, another month after that, and it's getting really bad. She couldn't sleep. She was getting visited all the time. Finally, we called up the minister again, and we started doing this routine every night. Mainly her and my ex, her mother, would, you know, pray it away, pray the ability away, ask for it to be taken away by God, you know.
Mm-hmm.
These prayers, and it actually disappeared within about a month or two, and it stayed dormant for years and years. There's no disturbances, no nothing. She hit puberty, and it went full bore. You know, it was just, bam.
Oh, yeah.
All of a sudden, she was just bombarded. You know, when I used to have a little bit of gifts when I was a kid, not much. But when I hit puberty, mine stopped. It was odd for me. But here she hits puberty, and it's like, wham. You know, all of a sudden she's seeing the neighbor guy who shot himself.
Well, that's supposed to...
She's describing this guy that he was dead in the 90s.
Hey, Corker, that's supposed to be different for the girls, right? As they say, most poltergeist activity comes from preteen women, right? Females.
What's that?
They say that a lot of the poltergeist activity, it's believed, comes from the preteen young ladies with all their stuff happening in their bodies and stuff. The psychic energy happens. You've heard that, right?
Yep. Yeah. I've heard of that, too. And, you know, something, you know, whatever happened with puberty with her, but all of a sudden her abilities and spirits, we would go to places that for events, for ghost hunting events. And she was like the highlight of it. All of a sudden she would, you know, be sitting there and everybody would hover around and they'd listen and watch her. And all of a sudden you would hear voices coming through, like down the tunnel, you know, in the room. You could hear the voices speaking to her. And it was just crazy.
So audible voices, Corker, would just come out of the air at her and address her?
Corker, I think he's asking if audible voices came out of the air and she could just hear them.
Yeah, they were actually a lot of times, you know, it's just her that hears them. She repeats it, but there's been several times we've had groups come in for training. We would train them at the hotel in town. There's a haunted hotel that my brother-in-law owns. And groups would come in, and yeah, we have recordings of, you can hear the voices. Yeah, they're actually in the room. And we've gotten to know a few of them at the hotel in town that are regulars. You know, they, the spirits seem to be there for good. And we've had many people come, they just drop their jaws. You know,
she's a spark plug then. She fires up the atmosphere at these places. Wow.
Yeah, she has some ability to do that. You know, it's, other people will be there and stuff, but it seems like her, for some reason, the voices can be heard near her, you know, which a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people with talent, and it's crazy to be by her and actually hear the voices she's hearing. You know, it's just, it's like a tunnel sound, but you can hear them. It's like an echoey tunnel.
Right.
And it's just something. I don't know. I can't explain it, you know. I don't know how many people could.
Well, you know,
unbelievable.
Corker, getting into the book, because, you know, it kind of reminds me of Jaws. You said the Acherry demon haunting. You could say ghost, you could say demon. It's kind of like with the movie Jaws, you know, they say, you yell barracuda, everybody goes, huh, what? You yell shark, we got a panic on our hands. And you guys come out with, this was a demon haunting. And everybody out there, listeners around the world, right away, it sends a shiver down your spine, and you're right in the middle of it. And, you know, what happened? How did it come about with Paranormal Case File 263, man?
Well, what happened is, there's a local case, and it was actually taken on pretty unprofessional because it was a friend of a friend of a friend type thing. Just outside of the town I live near today. And what it was is, a person had contacted me, and he had said, you know, we've had this spirit in our house over the generations. It's a girl that comes through, young lady, and we just want to identify who it is. You know, it's a peaceful spirit, you know. It's all he would say, like a little girl, nice spirit, we just want to identify. So instead of doing a whole bunch of historic stuff on it, because I've lived there all my life, I've never heard of anything, you know, crazy in the area, up by the river, and never heard, you know, any families reporting anything. I just like, well, he goes, can you come this weekend? I'm like, yeah, sure. You know, that's fine. Because all I got is a concert of town my daughter's in, and afterwards we'll drive out. And he said the house would be ours for the weekend. And so it was just an innocent, you know, setting up. All we use for equipment are some recorders. I use a couple high eight camcorder night vision. I use a few VHSs, because what we find is when you're catching things on high eight, it seems like the VHSs with the old style tapes go haywire. When you line up the timing, it's always at the same time. So it's kind of a good, for us, it's like a confirmation when we're revealing the video.
Yeah.
So we just, that's all we have for setup. You know, it's just basic, a couple candles. I do a routine when I start off the investigation, saying, was there, you know, my permission of the owners, you know, I address who we are. It was just an innocent investigation. But what had happened is, we went through a private investigation during the week. I did just a quick interview with the owner. And one thing I noticed right away, we got out of the car and these ferocious dogs by the driveway. There's a kennel that allows them to get right to the driveway. And then the dogs can go towards the barn and go into a doghouse that's attached to the barn, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as we got out of the car, bam, you know, they're just like they're going to chew through the cage. And didn't think nothing of it. Thought, okay, some older people, watchdog, that's great. And we did the interview, and that night when we came for the investigation, that Friday night, the dogs were just quiet, you know, eerie. It just seemed like everything was quiet out there. And we went on our way, but it was in the back of my mind, you know, when you get out in the country and you hear these dogs going crazy, and then all of a sudden a silent that night, it was kind of eerie. And we set up for the cave for an investigation inside, you know, pretty easy, pretty quick. We knew the house already because we had visited during the week. And what had happened, how it all came about, is me and my ex were outside wandering the yard and the land, because there were specific spots where one had a child that was caught in the middle of the night, even in 24 weather, at 2 or 3 a.m., staring up at the sky for no reason. He'd be in his underwear and 20 below, you know.
Wow.
There's weird things, you know, in the case about these things, you know, these reports in the family. Kid, you know, as a kid, they'd stare at the sky, and then they'd come out, and it's almost like they're frozen, you know, and people had to shake them, point them up.
Yeah.
So we're exploring these areas. And while we're outside doing that, my daughter and my son were inside setting up. And we were off to the left of the house, and then she had noticed, I didn't know at the time, of course, but she thought she noticed something out by her car. Some skinny person with a bigger hat or with a hat on or something. And at this time, we were out far away from the car, and we heard this staticky sound. My wife at the time identified it as like a dimensional sound, because she's had times where she says that her aunt, her great aunt, would call on the phone if not plugged in, it would be like crackling. And she,
oh, I got you.
You know, and she identified, she goes, that's what that sounds like a dimensional crackling. And it went by us. It was like, you know, like a car, but it was like, I can't even do it right. That sounds silly, but it kind of went by us in a short distance towards the house. And I just thought nothing of it. You know, it wasn't real loud. It was eerie, but it was pitch black. You know, I didn't, we didn't hear anything pumping the ground. We just heard this thing in the air.
Right.
I was trying to excuse it, you know, in my mind. And a little bit later, like within half a minute, we started heading back to the house. So we're getting out to where it's really dark. There's no yard light. And we head back to the house, and we get into the door. And my son starts saying, Dad, you got to see the camera. You got to see what's on it. And one thing I typically don't do, is look at any evidence during the case. You know, I don't stop and look at pictures, because then you get sidetracked.
Right.
You know, you boot up the computer, you hook up the, you know, camera, before you know it, your whole investigation sitting there reviewing what you got. You end up having nothing.
Right, know? Right.
But here's my son flipping out, you know, he's like, you gotta see this. And I go, okay, you know. And my daughter at the time was, you know, living room, we have like a love seat. And my aunt, or her mom went in there, and all of a sudden, I could hear, as I was trying to look at this camera, I heard Tatiana say, it's crawling on my leg, your spider's crawling on me. And that got my attention, and Jackie was in there, my ex, and I started going in there, because all of a sudden, my daughter was flipping out, her eyes were rolling back, she was starting to twitch some, and there's a lot more that happened, you know, it's in the book, I don't want to go through it all, because I
can't. Right.
But, it got me sidetracked from the camera, you know, so I didn't look at the camera. All of a sudden, all the attention was on her, and this went on for about a half an hour before we got it to stop, you know, before we got where we were satisfied where it stopped, what was happening to her.
Right.
And at that point, because of what happened, and like I said, it's in the book. I got video of it, but of course, I can't put that in the book. We decided to pack up and get the heck out, because that just wasn't right. You know, she was doing seizuring stuff. Our family has no history of seizures. There's no joints the way they were. It was crazy. You know?
Has she had anything like this happen to her since that event? Like, if that was the first time something like this had happened to her since she was exposed to it, has anything like that happened since?
No, and I was expecting, you know, kind of like those horror movies, you know, even though they're as fictional as can be, you kind of have it in the back of your mind, you know, kind of expecting, okay, now what the kind of hell am I going to go through? But unbelievably, there was no residual afterwards.
Wow.
It was unbelievable. In fact, you know, we got her home that night, the next day, and later that night, actually, she wouldn't go to sleep right away. She didn't know what happened. You know, she had no recollection. The last thing she remembers, she said the spiders were crawling up her leg, and she heard voices.
Huh.
And voices she couldn't understand. And then that was it. That's all she remembered.
So. It's kind of like a psychic overload, huh? Something just kind of overloaded her psyche.
Yeah, it was something crazy. And, well, then I go to talk to her more, you know, after she calmed down, we're home, and she goes, yeah, there was this, you know, this person. She goes, are you sure you guys weren't by the car? You know, to me, my ex, I go, no. to it. It was a skinny with a big head, you know, and I'm like, okay, one thing, I said, let's get this straight. I'm not skinny. So, first and foremost, and her mother is shorter, and we were wearing jackets because even though it was April, it was chilly here in Minnesota that night, and there's no way that we could be what she described.
Right.
And then, you know, I was talking with her and the son, and I was like, well, then the picture was caught. She was, I went to look out the door, and I looked at the camera, and, you know, finally, after we got settled down, and there was the picture that I forwarded to you for the show of this thing, you know, this glossy-eyed looking thing, looking face-to-face with her. In fact, it even has the head turned just like her.
Now, Corker, that's the shock and awe. That's the one that you sent me. I haven't showed the viewers around the world just yet because I wanted to go with you on this, and you tell me when to show it, and you can walk the folks through it.
Yeah. Before I do that, the timing of all of this, when she had seen something at the car, and when the picture was taken, you know, when the timing on the camera, and then I talked to them, we came in right after the picture. So that noise we heard go by makes me think, you know, that, you know, what we heard, that was right prior to this. So part of me, you know, there's more in the book that explains more. There's, you know, that natives are involved in the book, clergy, I've got ufologists in the book, a bunch of professionals, a bunch of reports, MUFON reports from the area that I never knew happened because I lived there all my life. I never knew there were humanoid sightings there. There's a lot of things in the book that's really, really, when I was writing it, I mean, if I was the reader reading this, I would think, yeah, right. You know, I would. I mean, it's this thing that it just doesn't, you know, make sense, and it's hard to believe.
Sure.
So I was real hesitant on writing it, but I did it anyways, and I included all the evidence I could. You know, the MUFON report, you can't argue. The picture, I got the original. If anybody wants to take it and run it through any system, I've already had it done. It's the original and all this thing.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and bring the picture up now, Corker.
Bring the picture up? Yeah. Go ahead and run that picture. And
folks who are listening on the radio, you know, we're also available on Ustream and YouTube. You can check out the picture there. And Sean's bringing it up right now on Ustream.
Absolutely. Corker, go ahead and walk us through it. I see your daughter's blonde hair, and then I see the wood frame of the window. And you take it from there, sir.
You see the wood going up and down at an angle. That was the edge of the door. And so the door is completely open. You're not going through the glass when you're looking at the entity. All there was at that point was a screen door, you know, it was a clear screen.
Right.
That was black nylon screen, so there was no reflection. There was nothing like that. And this is what we caught. And it's really eerie when you look at it. You know, I sent it off to ufologists. I sent it off to people into the alien stuff. I sent it off to... Now, I wanted to be thorough. You know, I didn't want to sit there and say, oh, it's an alien, or oh, it's a demon, or, you know.
Sure.
You know, jumping on it. And, of course, everybody in their field, you know, fields don't like to cross, it seems. Everybody's got this... Most people, you know, they're in the alien field.
Oh, but believe me, Corker, you know, believe me, Corker, yeah. We cross a lot of fields. They're all cross with us.
Yeah.
So it's
Yep. And you know, but there's so many, you know, that they're persistent in their field. And I was getting that a lot, you know, from these pros in the field. And what they said, that's in the book as well, you know, their opinions and everything else. It wasn't until I got a medicine man involved that things were making more sense. You know, that Chippewa medicine man. Prior to that, you know, I was getting pulled one way or another, a Catholic minister, priest saying with Nepha, you know, the whole demon. But then there was more peculiar things that happened to us personally around the case time that kind of charged it to be more than just a demon encounter. You know, I called it, one thing I wanted to say, too, is I call it a cherry demon encounter, or cherry demon haunting.
Mm-hmm.
It's initially going to be called a cherry encounter. And what I did is I looked at it. I don't like, honestly, with the word demon, and I know it's part of your guys' title. I mean, the name means what it is. It's a spooky, you know, and set you up for evil. And the thing is, you know, with this, I wanted to call it just an encounter. But I also had to grab an audience, you know, and have people realize, you know, what do they think of that dark, negative entity? So that's what it was, regardless of what you want to label it. It was, I mean, anything that is what it did, my daughter, is not, you know, God-giving.
Right.
So I came up with this name. But don't be fooled by the name.
Right. Now, Corker, I tell you, brother, I got to apologize because we're running out of time, and I could go on for weeks with you.
Oh, believe me, I'm listening and going, I wish we had you for another hour.
Yeah, yeah. But, Corker, we're going to have to wrap it up, brother. Where can they find your book at?
They can find my book. It is everywhere, absolutely. But easiest is Amazon, because on Amazon you can get paperback, you can get a Kindle, you can get the app, so you can put it on your Android, your iPhone, your computer, you know, it's all downloadable for all the devices, all everything, right off Amazon. It's at Barnes & Noble, you know, it's all over. It's been distributed everywhere. It's in many bookstores, too, that you'll walk right into. You don't have to be online. Libraries are starting to load it. It'll be at libraries that are, you know, alone. And, yeah, it's growing. It's, you can go to my website also. And it has all the links, and that's the cherrydemonhaunting.web.com. That'll give you all the links to everything.
Okay, brother. Hey, thank you so much. We're definitely going to have you back on. Corker Johnson, guys, author of A Cherry Demon Haunting, the true story of Paranormal Case 263. Thanks so much for coming on tonight, Corker.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks, guys. Have a good time.
All right, brother. Tonight's band, guys, Redzilla, the name of the song, Greed. We'll be right back with Amy Holloman from Terra Behind the Walls.
That's right. We'll be right back.
I am a child of the dark, creeping inside of monster. Reaping all secrets of their creed. You are the victims who they need. Well, follow my children. Gather your men. Hunt their disciples. And cut off their heads.
From Mysteries at the Museum on Travel Channel, and you're listening to the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show.
That's right, guys. Welcome back, listeners around the world, to your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show on the doubleheader Sunday night. Huh? Wow.
It's crazy, Sean. You know, it's those times where we get those people on the show, and you wish you had all night to talk to them. And here we have two people lined up tonight, and we're sitting there going, how do we fit this all in our normal show? And it's eating me up inside because we've got to get so much out of tonight.
That's it. Full. Packed full, man. Going into October, guys. We're going to be coming at you hard. But hey, tonight's band, Redzilla. Find out more about Redzilla at ReverbNation.com. That's Redzilla, ReverbNation.com. But Demon Hunter.
Ghost Man.
Tonight's guest from Terror Behind the Walls, guys. from Eastern State Penitentiary, director, character, actor, Amy Holloman. Amy, what's going on?
Hey, guys. I'm so excited to be on the show. Finally, Halloween is here.
Yes. Spooky time.
We've been sitting around talking all night about how we're just so thrilled that the our favorite time of year is here. We're decorating our houses, and finally you get to show the innermost self. I'm sorry, there was a bad Planet of the Apes line there, but your innermost self out, out for the world to see.
Yeah, well, I'm so excited to talk to you guys. Two weekends ago, opened up our show down at Terror Behind the Walls at Eastern State Penitentiary, and we're really stoked. Do you know that much about Terror Behind the Walls, or should I tell you guys and your listeners a little bit about what it's like?
Oh, start right off by telling. I mean, Sean and I are both Eastern State fans. I've been there several times myself. I've actually gotten to spend the night there, and
awesome!
Yeah, there's nothing like being inside those walls at nighttime.
Yeah, you can say that again. Yeah. Well, so you guys know, but I'll tell a little bit for some of your listeners who maybe haven't heard of it before. Eastern State Penitentiary is a National Historic Landmark located in the heart of the city of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It once was home to some infamous criminals like Al Capone and Slick Willie Sutton. And it's now shut its doors and no longer functions as a prison, but it's a historic site, so it's a museum. So people can come learn about the building. And then, so you might ask, well, what's Terror Behind the Walls?
What's Terror Behind the Walls, Amy?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Amy. We just jump in from time to time.
Jump in. I know. I'm excited to tell you guys about this. Well, Terror Behind the Walls is America's largest haunted house, and it's located inside of the massive castle-like prison of Eastern State Penitentiary.
Mm-hmm.
So what's awesome about that is that the building itself was built in 1829, and it's designed to be intimidating. It really was built so that all the Philadelphians at the time would see this giant castle and think twice before committing a crime, because they didn't want to get locked up in there. So it's the perfect setting for a haunted house. It's, in my opinion, it's the most unique setting in the world, and it's absolutely astounding to have a Halloween event there. I'm so happy to be part of it.
Now, Amy, Sean, like I said, Sean and I, big fans of Eastern State. And like I said, nothing like being in those walls at night. And the average person can't get into Eastern State at night. So this is a unique opportunity to get inside the prison.
That's correct. The museum is open, which it is. It's a 10-acre property. It's open all year round for daytime tours, where you can come learn about the history of the building from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. But after that, the building's closed. And it's very quiet typically at night until the fall season. And that's when we have 29 show nights where visitors from all over the world come to see this haunted house. So not only is it a haunted house that's filled with scares, filled with actors, Hollywood quality costumes, special effects makeup, custom made props and animatronics, but you also, as you walk out of one attraction and are heading to the next, you're in the crumbling cell blocks of Eastern State at night. It's so cool, and I'm sure you guys know it's notoriously haunted.
Oh,
so
yeah.
People come to the haunted house just hoping that maybe they'll get a glimpse of something paranormal, like, while they're there.
Now, is there any time, like any part of the prison, that you tell somebody, you're going to be, the headless inmate that's up in cell block number 16, and they look at you and go, oh, no, I'm not staying alone in cell block 16.
Well, most of our actors pride themselves on being very courageous, and they are. But there have been some experiences, yes, where people have said before, they've come to me and said, Amy, I don't want to be that spot anymore. For example, we have one attraction that's called Lockdown. That's in an original 1800s cell block, and it's where The zombie inmates have really taken over and created chaos, and the guards have lost all control. Well, this is located in original cell block 12. There's one scene where you go upstairs onto the second floor of cell block 12, and I've had over four different years, I've had actors come and tell me they don't want to be up there anymore. And I said, you know, what's the situation? What's going on?
Yeah.
And they've told me time and time again that they've seen the same thing happen, where they're standing at the end of the cell block. They can look down, they see all the cells, and all of a sudden they see a figure flying towards them down the cell block and making a screeching noise, halting, and then flying back down the cell block. Some people, they called it, one person said it was like a female ghost. Another person described it to me as a banshee. I mean, of course, I'm not an expert. I don't know what it really is. But the fact that actors told me this year after year, actors who don't know each other, it really crept me out that they could tell the same story. So, I mean, there's got to be something to that.
It's a shame you can't capture it and put it on the payroll, Amy.
We have had ghost hunters come in and do some paranormal investigations.
Yeah.
And there is, I guess they say that cell block 12 is one of the most active spaces. But you would think, like, during a haunted house where you have visitors playing, and we have 150 actors in the show inside the building every night, let alone the ones that we let out to terrorize the streets.
Yeah.
But just inside the building, you'd think with all that energy that you would never see a ghost, because you always think, like, you're in a quiet space and a ghost creeps up on you or something. But still, like, there's been thousands of people who have lived or worked in Eastern State Penitentiary over its time frame, and there has to be some of that energy that has still been trapped inside the building.
Well, has anybody ever come down after the haunted house and said, oh, you know what really freaked me out was that screaming lady up on cell block 12?
I haven't heard visitors say that, and I think part of it is the fact that they're so busy. Like, they see, we have, like, these giant Tesla coils and actors popping out, startling them. So I haven't heard someone say anything particularly about cell block 12. But we often do have visitors who email us that their experience, photographs that they've taken. Sometimes they show orbs. I'm not an expert. Like I said, sometimes it really does resemble, like, a shape of a face that was behind the door. And we try to think about, like, is there any reason we'd have an actor there? Or was there any reason we'd have a mannequin in that spot? And
right.
Typically the answer is no. So again, I'm not an expert. I can't guarantee that what they captured was truly activity, but there's certainly people who come through and think what they saw was real, and you can't convince them otherwise.
Now, Amy, when I was growing up, I used to love to, and you know, man, you've been in the field for so long, there's nothing like suiting up and scaring people at a haunted house. And I remember when I was younger, I was the Wolfman, and they put me in this caged area, and this place was supposed to be haunted. It was like an old gymnasium of an old school, and I remember sitting there in pitch black, waiting on the next, you know, tour to come through for I could jump out at them. What is that? Because you know every nook and cranny over there at the penitentiary. So what's that feel like when you're down some lonesome hallway waiting on the next group to come in? You're down there by yourself. You ever had anything happen, you know, popping off down there when you're by yourself, voices or anything?
I have had one experience. I've definitely had times when I've been waiting. Our sets are designed extremely well. So sometimes when an actor is waiting, they're in a space where a customer can't even see them.
Okay.
They're in a dark hallway where right behind them is the true crumbling prison walls, and you're waiting and you're waiting, and that customer comes. Once in a while, I've had, I feel like someone tap on my shoulder. I turn around thinking, you know, it's going to be an employee trying to talk to me, and there's no one there. Just put the chill down your back. But then, you know, our goal is to scare people. So we get right back into it and scare that next customer. But certainly, every night when we leave, people do share a lot of these bizarre experiences that they have. I have also once, at the end of a show night, had one ghost experience that happened to me. It wasn't something I saw, but something I've heard. And it's actually the only experience that I, like, feel extremely confident saying there was something paranormal that took place. Ooh. And he should say it's the only building that's ever happened to me in. And I've, as someone who runs a haunted house, I've been in a lot of weird buildings, and as someone who was a young explorer, I've been in a lot of weird abandoned places, you know? So I think that says a lot about Eastern State.
Amy, how do you even start to control an environment like that prison? I mean, when you're running an event, I know it's got to be a huge staff, but I mean, you're one of the main people here. I mean, how does that work?
Well, Terror in the Walls is a very sophisticated event. It's the largest haunted house in the country. So what that means is it takes a lot of planning. We put a lot of time and planning into the show. This is our 22nd season. So we've been doing this for a long time. We're professional haunters. We have a team of people who are considering things like operational logistics, how the lines work, how the ticket sales work. And then we have a whole creative team that I'm the head of that does what I think a lot of the fun stuff, where we come up with what's the theme of the attraction going to be like. So I sit down at a table and I lead a meeting with our technical director, who's in charge of the build of the actual haunted house,
right,
and the building of props. And then I sit down at the same table with our special effects makeup director, who leads a team of 14 makeup artists every night to get 250 actors into awesome zombie makeup with all different types of looks. And then the third person who sits at that table is our costume director. So, and our fourth is our director of operations, who's seen hundreds of haunted houses all over the country and knows what are the safest practices. Because when you're bringing a lot of customers into your attraction, you want to make sure they're safe, but our goal is always to scare them, to entertain them, to make them have that Halloween experience they always remember. But safety is the primary goal. So with all those experts sitting around at a table, we start with brainstorming, just creepy ideas. It might be a dream we had, maybe something we saw in a movie or a play that we went to. And then we just list tons and tons of ideas, and we start circling some and crossing some out and then thinking about what are the actual logistics of us building that. And then the tech director will say one thing, costumes adds to that, and then we add in what are the actors going to say? What are they going to do? So we really think about what's scary. Sometimes we look, like I did some reading this year, some psychological things about fear. What are paranoias that people have? What are those basic elements that people have that chill up their spine and get that scream, you know, easily? And then how can we do that on a large scale so that they think, like, you know, they're afraid of spiders, that they think they're trapped in an abandoned prison with spiders all over the place? Or maybe it's, you wouldn't think it, but inside of a prison, maybe somewhere in one of those dark corners, what you're afraid of is a clown, and perhaps there is one clown waiting around one of those corners. So it's really hard, because when you're creative, you want to build a haunted house, you have tons of ideas. But narrowing it down and thinking, how can we really create something that's going to be a great, scary experience for the customer, it takes a lot of time, takes a lot of trial and error. But I can tell you this year, I think we have the best show we ever had. I'm so proud of it. Our customers are coming out. When they finally get out, they're out of breath, which is like the first time I've heard them coming out of breath and breathing, and they all say it's awesome, it's epic. And I used to hear people several years ago say, oh, I wish there was more. They're not saying that because they're already like fulfilled with amazing Halloween entertainment. So it takes a lot of work, but I think we're seeing great results this year at Terror Behind the Wall.
Now, Amy, somebody in the chat room wants to know if there's a morgue involved anywhere.
That's great. That's perfect. There is a morgue. So we have six different attractions within the haunted house. One of them is infirmary. So this is an old-fashioned style infirmary that is modeled after the real infirmary that was in Eastern State Penitentiary. So you can imagine there's different scenes within it, like an operating room. There's a dentist room, and there is a morgue. So there's a morgue doctor who runs the place, and he's not someone you would want to run into in any dark corner or alley, let alone an abandoned prison in an old hospital.
You know, it, to give people some idea of how scary this place, the building by itself, when I was there to spend a night back in 2007, I went in the first week of November, and you guys had just taken down the, you know, all the Halloween stuff, all the terror behind the walls, and I had set a camera up in cell block 12 on the second level and left it up there. And it was time to close, you know, you're only allowed in there when you're spending the night about 4 or 5 hours. And our time was up. And when you're there as a guest, you're not really allowed to go anywhere in the prison by yourself. So I had to go back up and get my camera at the last minute. And even our host, our tour guide who was with us, did not want to go up to 12. And I said, you know, I have to go get my camera. So I went running up there, and she came running up after me, and I ran headlong into a dummy that had been left behind from Terror Behind the Walls, and let out a scream when I ran, and I don't scare easy, but it was just kind of like hanging in midair, and I ran right into it.
Yes, you did.
It, the building itself gives you that whole feeling when you're there. It's the building is one of the characters involved.
Oh, certainly. Every year we say, you know, Eastern Cape Town Century is National Historic Landmark. We start off our Halloween season by raising two gigantic, they're like 300 pounds, over 60 tall gargoyles. We lift them up and put them onto the facade of the penitentiary so that people know, although we still have our daytime tours during the day, Terror Behind the Walls is here. And you're going to come here for Halloween at night and you're going to have a blast.
Hey, Amy, how did you get started in this? I mean, were you a home haunter before you got into this?
I'm sorry?
Were you a home haunter before you got into this? How did you get into this field?
Actually, I wasn't a home haunter, although when I was a kid, my friends and I would always build haunted houses and force our parents to build them time and time again.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember a lot of dried ice. A lot of Kool-Aid is blood, but that was when I was, you know, in elementary school. The reason I got into this was, actually, I was really interested in becoming part of this haunted house because not only is it a haunted house and I love Halloween and I love to act, but also it's a fundraiser for the historic site. So Terror Behind the Walls each year raises 63% of the operating cost that allows the building to be open and be safe so that people like you guys could come explore it if you want.
Oh, wow.
So that was so cool to me. Like, I was like, this is a haunted house. It's a nonprofit that's doing something awesome and preserving history of our country. And I get to scare people? Awesome. Well, so I went and auditioned. I remember thinking, I never used to put on makeup, you know. I put on black eyeliner, and I remember practicing in the mirror, making scary faces. I had no idea what it would be like to audition for a haunted house.
And yeah.
I went, I auditioned, you had to give your best scream, do some improv as a guard, improv as an inmate, and really be able to look in someone's eyes and show them that you're not scared, but you're going to scare them. So I got hired as an actress, had a blast. It was the coolest job I ever had. In the following year, I became a manager, and I worked my way up the ranks to eventually being in this position I am now. So this has been my ninth season with Terror Behind the Walls of Eastern State Penitentiary. It's definitely the coolest job I've ever had. And I hate to make everyone that's listening jealous, but it's probably the coolest job in the world. Because all those things that we like to think of as scary things that you think, oh man, that would be freaky. What if like an inmate came around that corner and had a knife and pulled you back and had that knife up to your throat and told you it wasn't going to let you go? Yeah, that would definitely scare me. You know what? I'm going to do that to thousands of people this year.
Hey, have you ever got anybody went nuts on you, Amy, in there? Like, you know, just started screaming and fell down. You had to be like, whoa, 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 it's okay, it's okay.
Yeah, we pride ourselves in dropping bodies. So that's what we call that. That's when someone's so scared that their legs fall out from underneath them and they drop to the ground in fear. And sometimes that's happened to me before. I do an inmate character that I call Knuckles. And I've popped out and scared people. They drop to the floor. And you try to, like, you know, you want to make sure your customer's safe. So sometimes you'll go and just ask, are you okay? And break character for a second. Yeah. And while you try to do that, you try to be nice. they're crawling on the ground and screaming and running away from you because you feel like a horrifying inmate. You can't help them. So we do have people throughout the show who are event staff who are actually around corners. They wear black cloaks and they're there in case you get too chicken and they're scared and need to be escorted out, which right now we're having record numbers of people asking to leave about halfway through the show because we really put so much time and energy into changing up the rules this year and making it even scarier than ever.
Man, I'm jealous, Demon Hunter. Amy's right. This has to be the coolest job in the world. When I was a kid, Amy, I used to draw haunted houses, and I would take those. Remember the old cardboard cutout decorations we used to have? You know, I used to hang them all over the attic and have my parents walk through. I used to try to do that too, man.
It's funny because, you know, you get this stuff going on, and like you said, this raises the money. Over 60% of the money each year to keep this place running. And when Eastern State first closed down, they almost ripped the whole thing down and turned it into a strip mall.
That's true. That's true. It's so sad. As someone who I really enjoy history, and I'm someone who's so proud of being American, and this country is, we're a young country compared to places like continents like Europe that have been around for a lot longer than us. It's important that we maintain our buildings so that we can remember from what we've done in the past.
Absolutely.
Eastern State Penitentiary's mission is to allow people to walk through the building so they can learn about the history and think about some of the challenges that the founders of the penitentiary faced and how does that apply today. This is so important. If that building were knocked down, we might eventually forget what were the great things that happened here, what were the mistakes, and how can we as a society think about that and evolve in different ways. You know, it's such an important building, and that's why it's a national historic landmark. And then if you're someone who likes scary things or interested in just prison content, it is so cool. You know, like, I'm not someone who knows that much about architecture, although standing in the building is astounding. Hearing some of the different stories about the inmates who live there or the guards who work there, that's the coolest thing ever. And I didn't even tell you guys, our audio tour, you come on daytime, is narrated by the actor Steve Buscemi from Boardwalk Empire. But he talks in your ear the whole time and telling you, turn to the left and walk down cell block 9.
Now, Steve Buscemi by himself would scare me. But
yeah. Hey, did you guys, hey, Amy, what was that movie that he was in where he cut his mom, she came back as a zombie. Remember that? And he had to cut her head off and her arms and all that?
Geez.
You guys remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
I don't know that one, Sean, but now I'm going to have to IMDb it.
Dude, I was looking everywhere for it. It's a classic. Well, it's like a B-lister, but I that's the kind of movies I like anyway. What's your favorite type of movies? Besides, I mean, I know horror, but like B, slasher flicks, ghost. What is it, Amy?
I'm sorry, I lost you for a second.
What's your favorite type of movies, like horror movies, like slasher or traditional ghost haunting? Which types?
Ooh, I like slasher films, but I also like some sort of like psychological fear. Like, I really like Pan's Labyrinth.
Ooh.
It's a movie that I really like. But I also like Cabin in the Woods, you know, where, you know, there's a little bit of like, you know, every horror lover gets to see some of those elements in that, and then all those crazy monsters that are like in every movie comes out. I'm a big fan of American Horror Story.
Yes.
That show is awesome. And obviously, since you're asking, Walking Dead's last season was like near and dear to my heart, being zombies in a prison, because that's what Terror Behind the Walls is. And I was like, this is so cool, because everybody loves The Walking Dead. They like this concept of zombies in a prison. They can come to Terror Behind the Walls and experience that for real.
That's
so,
it.
I get to make people's dreams come true, and unfortunately for them, also their nightmares.
Hey, sis, we got to get ready to close out. Where can they find out about ticket information and read up more about the Terror Behind the Walls?
For tickets, you go to easternstate.org. Buy tickets online. Buy them in advance. That's the cheapest way, and that way you avoid the lines. easternstate.org. You can follow us on Twitter, which is Terror@ESP. That's Terror@ESP. And friend us on Facebook, because we post different things about the show all the time. It's such a pleasure talking to you guys.
Oh, it's been great, Amy. Thank you so much. And again, you know, Sean, you're getting married in a couple weeks, so we won't get down there this year. We're going to have to get back out there.
We got to. Amy, you rock, sis. Have a great haunting season.
All right. I hope I see you guys in Philly. Tear behind the walls.
Absolutely. Have a good night.
You guys, bye.
Bye. Demon Hunter, the hour is upon us, sir.
It is, and with all that horrible, horrible, horrible horror, is that allowed? Am I allowed to use horror that
much? Yeah, I think you use that, man.
it is time for us to go and enjoy our own nightmares, because tomorrow Sean and I go back to the true nightmare, our day jobs.
Cue music!
And on that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for another wonderful Ghostman and Demon Hunter show.
Absolutely, guys. Special thanks to tonight's guest, Amy Holloman, guys, from Terror from Behind the Walls at Eastern State Penitentiary. Corker Johnston, author of Cherry Demon Haunting, the True Story of the Paranormal Case 263. Special thanks to Midnight Syndicate for the tunes. Creations by Souls Denounce. That's soulsdenounce.com. And Serial Weird for all your weird reading, guys. Check that magazine out. Hey, from the haunted backroads of America, this has been another G&D exclusive interview. Don't go changing America. You know we won't. Demon Hunter!
Because we love you.
Night, guys.